Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Marked for Science, a worldwide event with thousands expected to turn out this Saturday, Earth Day, for marches at more than 600 locations across the globe. The flagship event is being held here in Washington, D.C., featuring speakers in several large teach-in tents on the National Mall, where scientists, educators, and leaders from a variety of disciplines are discussing their work. And thousands of Australians marched across the country as part of the movement. One woman from Melbourne.
We are increasingly concerned about the lack of science in modern day politics, and we want science to inform policy more, and we're really, really passionate about evidence-based policy.
And U.S. Vice President Mike Pence and Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull have urged China and Australia to do more to pressure North Korea to drop its nuclear weapons and ballistic missile program. During a joint news conference, Mr. Pence reiterated the point he's been making about both China and North Korea.
As President Trump made clear just a few days ago, if China is unable to deal with North Korea, the United States and our allies will. The United States and Australia face this threat and every other one together.
And satellite imagery of North Korea's nuclear test site shows activity that could indicate preparation for a nuclear weapons test. That's according to the U.S.-Korea Institute at Johns Hopkins University. The report says the site appears capable of conducting a nuclear test at any time the orders received from Pyongyang. And the images are believed to show at least five mining carts and more. This is VOA News. An overnight Taliban suicide raid on a major military base in northern Afghanistan left at least 135 people dead, mostly soldiers, in the deadliest attack on Afghan forces. That attack on the highly secured Afghan military facility has refueled criticism of the government's security measures and its policy in tackling the resurgent Taliban. Afghan security forces have suffered massive casualties since U.S.-led foreign combat troops left Afghanistan in 2014. U.S. Secretary of State, or I should say of Defense, Jim Mattis, visited Israel Friday on his Middle East tour to discuss regional security. Secretary Mattis visited Israel and made the marks the first trip to the country by a cabinet member in the new Trump administration. And Israeli leaders were eager to praise the Trump team for their tough approach towards Syria and Iran.
To the country by a cabinet member in the new Trump administration. And Israeli leaders were eager to praise the Trump team for their tough approach towards Syria and Iran.
Mr. Secretary?
Yes, sir.
Welcome. I think this is a welcome change, a strategic change of American leadership and American policy.
Mattis stressed the need to defeat Islamic State and confront Iranian activities, which he said continues to threaten Israel and its neighbors with ballistic missiles through its maritime activities and through its proxies and surrogates such as Hezbollah, a terrorist organization that's helping Syrian President Bashar al-Assad stay in power.
Syria and Iraq will be a top priority in talks with leaders at Mattis's next stop, which is Qatar. It hosts U.S. military aircraft used in the counter-Islamic State fight. A man was shot and killed during massive protests in the Venezuelan capital, Caracas, making him the ninth person to be killed during protests in the country this month. Neighborhoods there have had nearly a daily and increasingly violent protest as the country slides deeper into an economic crisis. Tens of thousands of Venezuelans have participated in the demonstrations to denounce what they consider an increasingly authoritarian government. U.S. President Donald Trump has ordered a full review of the powers given to the government regulators to oversee the banking and finance industries following the financial meltdown of 2008. He went to the Treasury Department Friday to sign three executive orders that start the process of fulfilling campaign promises to undo regulations that he says unduly strain the U.S. economy. And it was a year ago Friday that music legend Prince was found dead at Paisley Park, a recording complex outside Minneapolis, where he lived and created his music. He died at the age of 57 from an accidental overdose. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotin in Washington.
The position of the law has always been that they're entitled to the pension, which is equivalent to 80% of what a sitting head of state takes.
Botswana Parliament enacts a law which allows former presidents to seek employment.
The nature of the campaigns so far has just been about, we want to retain power or we want to replace you, but without any concrete issues.
Political parties in the Kingdom of Lesotho intensify their campaigns ahead of the June 3rd elections.
She has been deprived of access to council. She has been deprived of access to relatives. She has been deprived of access to her family, her children. And there have been unnecessary restrictions.
And Amnesty International calls on the Ugandan government to unconditionally release an academic charged with insulting President Yoweri Museveni. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The parliament in Botswana has passed a law that enables the country's former presidents to seek employment after leaving office. The government in Gaborone welcomed the move after officials said the new law makes it legal for former presidents to find employment anywhere of their choice. They also said since the leaders will still be young and active, they need to share their expertise. But Dumelang Salishandu, a prominent opposition leader from the Botswana Congress Party, told me the law appears to have been passed to please President Ian Khama, who is set to complete his final term in 12 months.
We definitely are opposed to the change in the law relating to the benefits of a retired head of state. The practice or the position of the law has always been that they're entitled to the pension, which is equivalent to 80% of what a sitting head of state takes. But for them to get that pension, they then have to forfeit the right to seek active employment elsewhere. Now, this has been changed, obviously, at the behest of the current president, who is retiring in less than 12 months. And it's a clear indication that it's because he wants to take up active employment, but also still benefit from the retired president's pension.
Wouldn't the society benefit from their experience, knowledge that they have acquired while in office, and as such could share and impart it to the up-and-coming generation to make Botswana better?
Well, the retired presidents have been taking up national assignments, which are not necessarily positions that come up with a salary on a monthly basis. We have Festus Mogae, former president, who is also the chancellor for the University of Science and Technology in Botswana. Former President Masire is also a chancellor for the University of Botswana. President Ian Khama is not looking at such a dispensation. He wants to take up a job, possibly within the government of Botswana. So he will draw from the public purse a pension as a retired army general. He will also draw a pension as a retired head of state, and he also wants to earn a salary for whatever assignment he envisages taking within government.
What if he gets a job? As you are speculating, what if he gets a job in the private sector? What is wrong with that? And wouldn't this lessen the amount of money paid to ex-president that is a strain on the national budget?
Well, 2 points. We all know his CV. And he's not the sort of candidate who would be attractive to international organizations or huge private investment or private companies. He doesn't possess that kind of CV. So he certainly or most likely is looking at a job within government. If it's within the private sector, herein lies the difficulty. A private company that has the employment of a former head of state will have undue advantage in our economy that is dominated by government, because whenever he makes representations as a former head of state, he will receive unfair advantage over other private competitors. So either way, the disadvantages of him taking up active employment are there. But you see what the law has always been, if you do take up active employment and earn a salary, then forfeit the monthly cost that we incur. And he doesn't want to have it that way. He wants it both ways. He wants to have both the pension and the opportunity for working within government. And I am confident it's highly likely that we are looking at employment within government.
Now, this is law in Botswana. What is your party doing about this? And what do you think is the best way forward, since you have serious concerns?
There's very limited options. I don't think it's the sort of law that can be challenged in the courts because it doesn't infringe on the constitution of the republic. There are many other benefits that President Khama has sought to avail to himself through the changed law. For example, he wants to have unlimited access to the government planes, government helicopters, and all modes of transport. We will have the option of building his retirement home at government expense. I think there's a budget of 34 million pula at a place of his choice. It could be in his home village, meaning that should he pass on, it will become difficult for government to be able to use the building for anything else. All further heads of state in Botswana have been compelled to have their retirement home in Gaborone, the capital, so that they can be used for other activities as and when they become available after the president and his powers have passed on.
Some people are saying, what is the big deal? Because there are only a handful of former presidents in Botswana. Your take?
The big deal is this. Botswana has a very high level of unemployment, more than 20% level of unemployment. Botswana has one of the highest level of poverty incidence within the region. Botswana has one of the highest inequalities within the region. So there are serious socioeconomic issues that need to be addressed. The public service has gone for years without adjustment to their salaries because of the tight budget. So it beats logic that what is clearly on the face of it already a lucrative package, one would want to look at how they introduce additional luxuries to suit their taste.
Dumelang Salishando is a prominent opposition leader from the Botswana Congress Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Gaborone. Citizens in the Kingdom of Lesotho will go to the polls in June, the third in 5 years. The current administration has only served two out of its five full-year term because some parliamentary members of the ruling coalition defected to join the opposition. Last month, Prime Minister Pakadita Musisidi dissolved parliament after losing a vote of no confidence to pave way for the elections. Mafa Sejenimani, a political science professor at the National University of Lesotho, told me the upcoming elections will not resolve the country's plethora of social, economic and political challenges.
The issues are very simple. We have two types of issues which anybody who really wants to be in power in Lesotho should be focusing on. First, you are dealing with the bread and butter issues about how they will make the lives of people better than they are at the present time. But the nature of the campaigns so far has just been about we want to retain power or we want to replace you, but without any concrete issues. Because of the nature of the Lesotho economy, which is dependent largely on foreign inputs, people are also missing the point. They are forgetting to try to address the bottlenecks, and those bottlenecks have been unmasked by what we now talk about as the Pumapi Commission here.
Why do you think these politicians are getting away with it if the people are not holding them accountable or telling them to outline specific plans to address the economic challenges?
You know, the problem really is that at the moment, people think they can get away with the rhetoric. Just saying that we belong to this particular grouping, and you know that this is where we have always been. And as a result, that is those ones in the government side, always a coalition government which has just collapsed. They are always talking about that. The big issues really is that they have been trying to find ways in which they can protect a number of their allies in the military and police and other sectors who have charges pending against them but who have been protected from there. And as a result, all they do is to try to hide behind saying that we want the different splinter groups of the Congress Party to come together so that we will not be ruled by the other section.
Looking at the landscape at the moment, do you think Pakadita Mosisidi, the current prime minister, has a chance of being retained by the people of Lesotho?
I don't think he has a chance in hell of being retained. The only way he can be retained is if a massive intimidation continues. We have 80 constituencies which are being contested. And what he has now tried to do is to try to build up a coalition with some other political parties that his party will only contest about 54 and another one will contest about 25, so that at least they can try to see whether they can assist themselves in each of those. Before he lost a vote of no confidence in parliament, he already had a very slim majority. In the meantime, the opposition has been growing, and because of the disenchantment with some of the things, particularly the questions about the rule of law and everything else, you have a situation where you find that a large number of people are beginning to move away from him. So I don't see him winning the elections if they are free and fair.
How about the chances of former Prime Minister Tom Tabani?
Tom Tabani is the most likely person to be able to build a coalition, because no political parties will be able to emerge with an outright majority. All of them will need a coalition partner.
Mafa Sejanemane is a political science professor at the National University of Lesotho. He spoke with me from the capital, Maseru. Amnesty International has called on the Zimbabwean government to drop all charges against Pastor Ivan Mawarire. This after accusing the administration in Harare of using state institutions to persecute, harass, intimidate, and ultimately silence Mawarire. The activist was arrested on January 31st and charged with subversion and insulting the Zimbabwean national flag. Mawarire led several anti-government protests in 2016, denouncing corruption and the declining economy. Dipros Muchena, Amnesty International's regional director for Southern Africa, told me the government appears to be abusing the criminal justice system to settle political scores.
For a long time, Amnesty International has expressed this view that the continued harassment of Pastor Ivan Mawarire for us looks like Zimbabwean authorities using the criminal justice system for political persecution through prosecution. The idea really being to harass and stop people like Pastor Ivan Mawarire from speaking out against failing governance, declining economy, and general decline of human rights standards. And we've been urging the Zimbabwean authorities to really drop the charges, because there is no crime that Ivan Mawarire has committed. Everybody is entitled to protest against government, against policies that are unfavorable to their circumstances by the national constitution. And if you exercise your right within the national constitution, the state has to protect that right and, in fact, allow you to enjoy it.
Supporters of the ZANU-PF disagree. They say that charges against Pastor Mawarire should be allowed to continue and that anybody who breaks the law should face the full extent of the law. Pastor Mawarire, they argue, broke the law and should face the consequences as such. Your reaction?
Amnesty International stands by the view that people in Zimbabwe are allowed by the constitution to protest, to exercise the right to freedom of expression. And freedom of expression means expressing your thoughts, and those thoughts might run counter to the aspirations of supporters of government or the actions of government. But they should be protected anyway. That's what rights-respecting societies do. Anybody who has a problem with that will have to approach the courts. And in this particular instance, the court process has been opened. The state continues to show up to court having not fully prepared and therefore seeking postponement of the case. And when cases continue to be postponed, then you know that you are now using the system for harassment. The investment that is being deployed in this particular case we would argue that that kind of investment and determination should also be shown in cases before Zimbabwean courts, such as the disappearance of Itai Dzamara, whom we know he disappeared a long time ago, and we have not ever since heard from the state. So we're really asking the state to drop the charges and allow Pastor Ivan Mawere, like any other Zimbabwean, to enjoy his freedom of conscience and freedom of expression.
Well, they argue that ZANU-PF supporters saying that the charges, including subversion for insulting the national flag of Zimbabwe, is against the laws of the country, and that the judicial process should be allowed to go on unhindered, despite what they claim to be the foreign interference of the domestic affairs of Zimbabwe. Your take?
Pastor Ivan Mawarire is a prisoner of conscience. He has not committed any crime. It is not a crime to express your mind, to express your views about governance issues in the country, about decline, about your concerns about corruption, the inability to survive in a country which is under attack from the triple burden of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. That is not a crime. And the courts, yes, can determine that, and the courts should be allowed to determine that. But as you know, he is now facing lengthy periods of time without the case being concluded, and a clear case of harassment, a pattern of harassment is emerging, and that's what we are talking about. I think everybody else, including ZANU-PF supporters, have the freedom to express themselves the way they would, and they shouldn't be arrested for expressing themselves.
Actions of Pastor Mawarire, they argue, has created disaffection, disunity among Zimbabweans, and created tension and possibly undermining the territorial integrity of Zimbabwe, which they said is a crime and must be punished by the law. What do you say to that?
Disunity in the country, in the political parties that run this country, and disunity in the political groups that are in charge of the state cannot be attributed to the actions of Pastor Mawarire, who is speaking about the importance of good governance, human rights, and protection of the rule of law. The state of the nation and the state of the economy, or whether the people love the president or not, cannot be attributed to the actions of Pastor Mawarire, who is speaking out against corruption and against human rights abuses. So I think that it is a political discussion, and I'll leave that to political scientists and others who are more clued about the politics of Zimbabwe. Our cause and our statement is around the importance of protecting the rights of those who are seeking to protest against declining standards of living in the country, and that right is protected by the Constitution. And when a court process is chosen as a way to resolve disputes, it must be quick, decisive, and accurate, and it shouldn't be used as a system of promoting political persecution through prosecution.
Dipros Muchena is the Amnesty International's Regional Director for Southern Africa. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. Amnesty International is also calling on the Ugandan authorities to immediately and unconditionally release a Ugandan academic who was arrested and charged with insulting President Yoweri Museveni. Dr. Stella Nyanzi, a university lecturer, was detained for criticizing the president on her social media account. Amnesty International says Dr. Nyanzi is a prisoner of conscience held solely for her peaceful expression. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached Isaac Samakadi, the lead lawyer for Dr. Nyanzi, to find out how she is.
She's in good spirits, notwithstanding the deprivations that have been imposed on her, but she's generally in good spirits because she's an activist by position. She has been deprived of many liberties compared to other prisoners who are on remand awaiting trial. She has been deprived of access to counsel. She has been deprived of access to relatives. She has been deprived of access to her family, her children. And there have been unnecessary restrictions whenever such access has been given after struggles and letters of protest with the prison authorities. Besides that, she remained upbeat about her legal situation.
Many media reports see her as a victim of an overzealous government. Even Amnesty International has described her as a prisoner of conscience. How does that factor into her defense in the current prosecution?
We are grateful for the support we have received from all the human rights defenders across the world, including Amnesty International, which has declared her a prisoner of conscience. We are also grateful for the support we've received from her peers, academicians across the world, and many Ugandans
in the country and the diaspora who have come to understand that she is the embodiment of the struggle against a regime that has lost its moral compass, you know, its moral authority to lead the country by providing the services that are required by the generation of the day. But Stella's case has been helped by these initiatives in two ways. One, it has focused the agenda on freedom of expression as being a right which is grossly violated in Uganda. It has also helped focus on the draconian regime and the weaknesses of the Museveni regime as it reaches its evening. We see that the state is so disjointed in every department. Officers who are sworn to uphold the law are timid to act. Magistrates, judges, prison officers, police officers, many Ugandans, elite, well-educated, privileged, are a disgrace. And Stella's case has brought that out. The justice, law and order sector in Uganda has been exposed. What it is? It is comprised of 17 agencies, including the judiciary, the prison services, the police, the DPP. They are the most corrupt, the most elitist, the most uncommunicated, the most disjointed, full of self-serving individuals. It is a shame.
Now, given all that, and given that this case appears to be more political, what are the chances that you'd have a fair trial in court?
Less than even chances of success. We do our best, but it is the judicial institution on trial itself. Luckily, we represent a client who has the conceptual clarity and the intellectual rigor to understand what's going on. So she's not putting her faith in these institutions. She's putting her faith in the people of this country to understand exactly what's going on. We don't walk in there expecting fair trial. We walk in there expecting to find another breed of despots wielding judicial power at every level. A fair trial would be the surprise.
Isaac Samakadi is the lead lawyer for the jailed Ugandan academic Dr. Stella Nyanzi. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Scientists have discovered that compounds derived from some bacteria can lower blood sugar levels in obese people with pre-diabetes, possibly preventing diabetes itself from developing. Viewer's Jessica Berman reports.
Scientists call the bacteria-derived compounds postbiotics. They're not like probiotics, which are whole live bacteria people take to change the microbial environment of the gut, to ward off disease and improve digestion. Postbiotics instead are beneficial pieces of bacteria's cell walls that are easily absorbed by the body, which seems to make insulin work better. Postbiotics can also be derived from disease-causing microbes, say researchers. Insulin is a hormone produced by the pancreas that ferries glucose from food into cells to nourish the body. In people with prediabetes, insulin becomes less effective at its job. Postbiotics seem to boost the hormone's effectiveness. At least that's what researchers at McMaster University in Canada's Ontario province saw in experiments with obese mice. Obesity is a risk factor for prediabetes, also known as metabolic syndrome. Other risk factors for metabolic syndrome include high blood pressure and elevated cholesterol. Researchers say their work is designed to help obese individuals with prediabetes. Biomedical sciences professor John Schertzer is senior author of a paper on postbiotics published in the journal Cell Metabolism. To the extent that postbiotics are byproducts of bacteria in the gut, Schertzer says it's just a matter of unleashing their beneficial effects.
It's in all of our guts right now. The bacteria in our guts are constantly dying and being turned over, and they're producing a lot of this compound, this postbiotic. And so now we want to see if it's a viable approach to increase that in obese people or allow it to get through the gut, because the gut is a significant barrier. It's supposed to keep all of these things out, but there's good things that the gut is keeping out as well. So we want to see if we can manipulate that and get some of the good things to go through.
Reducing inflammation to lessen the risk of diabetes and other diseases is an active area of research. Schertzer says that's why there's interest in postbiotics and some other anti-inflammatory compounds contained in the pain reliever aspirin. There's also an existing drug to treat a cancer called osteosarcoma, he says, that seems to work on the same biological pathways as postbiotics. McMaster researchers are interested in seeing if that drug also reduces blood glucose levels in obese animals. Schertzer says investigators are poised to begin human clinical trials of postbiotics as a way to head off diabetes in obese individuals headed in that direction. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. What's worthy? And right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Bye. your body. I know you like it. I know. KY Spandit sings.
When we party, girl, you know that we're shutting it down.
Whatever. Money coming from the left, coming from the right.
Whatever.
We study for city to city, steady on the road.
Whatever.
I like you the way that you dance, baby girl. I wanna take you home.
Let's go. What's up? Fast track guys, really bad. DJ K-Wise, what's up? Techno, what's up? Yeah, I'm authentic, go check my label. Paradise in my crib, check out David. My love first, my boy, I'm a daycare, give me love that leisure. If you shake that back, girl, I did, yeah. I'm getting paid, yeah, come and take share. She my shaker, she rewind up, she rewind like, send a cassette. And you know the soldier man go need cadet. Chai, I go need patience. She went down and I nearly fainted. She brought it back like, say, she dey pay debt. Wait first, I must say you are a angel. We never date yet, I'm planning engagement. What's the bright price? I start the payment. Where can I come round to find the parents? Hello, damsel, you need to answer me the question. Understand? Don't place your focus on your future. What's wrong with it? Fast back and beating. Take it up. DJ K Wise, what's up?
DJ K Wise, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Peace out.
Your favorite boy, Techno, on the beat.
Mix Monster.
Shabba 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 eh. Shabba oh eh. Yeah. That girl with a booty like tools. Yeah. I feel to rest my head on her chest all day. Alright. She they always make me confused. Want to lay my head on her chest all day. Love me, love me, love me, love me, love me. Tease me, baby. Oh, touch me, touch me, touch me, touch me, touch me. Give me kiss, baby. Yeah. Girl, I for carry you city, my. But I'm gonna tell you to thank God. I feel to take you see Mr. Flavor. But I'm gonna tell you to sawale. I can't lie to you. I like you, take no go tell you to do road. And if you want to see Bangali, yo, that's an emergency. Emergency, oh Lord, that's not emergency. Good, better or worst, baby I'll be there for you. When you think you lost, baby I go show you the way. Monica, I take you on a journey, show you round Africa. All I ask is for you to love me, love me, love me, love me, love me. Tease me, baby. Oh, touch me, touch me, touch me, touch me, touch me. Give me kiss, baby. Yeah. Girl, I for carry you city, my. But I'm gonna tell you to Sanko. I feel today you see Mr. Flavor. But I'm gonna tell you to Sawale. I can't lie to you. I like the techno, go tell you to the road. And if you want to see Bangali, yo, that's an emergency. Die. Emergency. Oh Lord, that's not emergency. Sanko.
My Super Mario, baby, caro, dribble paso, paso, tantalizing physically. My baby dance so radically. The fire shots from my heart. Dribble paso, paso.
Now your matter, now info for my mouth. Cause I really, really, really love you. You are all that I am thinking about. Your love, it. Give me love, it. I don't send anybody, yeah. Give me love, it. I want your love, it. Give me love, it. I don't send anybody, yeah.
Now you are go Mario, my Super Mario, baby, caro, yeah. Dribble paso, paso, tantalizing physically. My baby dance so radically. The fire shots from my heart. So they go pass so catch. See this so slow. See this so slow. I want to test you, baby tomato. Baby tomato. I want to cook you. See this so slow. See this so slow. I want to test you, baby carato. Baby carato. I want to cook you.
Give me love, it. I want your love, it. Give me love, it. I know send anybody. I want your love, it. Give me love, it. I don't send anybody, yeah. Baby, now only you get my mumu body. Your love is with me for my body, yeah. And if I don't get you, I don't get nothing. The way you do me drive me crazy, yeah. Give me love, it. I want your love, it. Give me love, it. I don't send anybody, yeah. Give me love, it. I want your love, it. Give me love, it. I don't send anybody, yeah.
Girl, you don't make me turn up. All my body, they burn up. Girl, you don't make me turn up. I don't send anybody, yeah. Girl, you don't make me turn up. All my body, they burn up. Girl, you don't make me turn up. I don't send anybody, yeah.
Give me love.
Baby, love.
master music.
Maestro upon the beat.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. I remember, as the elders say, birds sing not because they have answers, but because they have songs. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States Treasury Department has imposed sanctions on Sohrab Soleimani, the former head of the Tehran prison organization and the organization itself, for serious human rights abuses. The sanctions are outside the scope of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action and are fully consistent with U.S. commitments under the deal. White House spokesman Sean Spicer announced the move at a press briefing.
The individual who is designated for his role in abuses in Iran's prison is the brother
of Qasem Soleimani, the commander of Iran's IRGC, Quds Force, who was himself previously designated under terrorism, counterproliferation, and human rights authorities.
As the State Department's latest human rights report on Iran noted, there are many credible reports of security forces and prison personnel torturing and abusing detainees and prisoners. In a press statement, the Treasury Department observed that Evin Prison is one of Iran's most notorious facilities due to the detention of many prisoners of conscience and well-documented accounts of their mistreatment and abuse. Former prisoners of Evin Prison have reported harsh interrogations, forced confessions, psychological and physical torture, and denial of access to medical care. The Treasury Department specifically pointed to an April 2014 incident at Evin, where dozens of security guards and senior prison officials severely beat political prisoners being held in Ward 350. The attack lasted several hours, and over 30 prisoners were wounded or injured. Sohrab Soleimani was the head of the Tehran Prisons Organizations during this violent event. He holds a leadership position within the State Prison Organization. The new designations by the Treasury Department, said John Smith, director of the Office of Foreign Assets Control, highlight our continued support for the Iranian people and demonstrate our commitment to hold the government of Iran responsible for its continued repression of its own citizens. White House spokesperson Sean Spicer noted that the sanctions against human rights abusers in Iran's prisons come at a time when Iran continues to unjustly detain in its prisons various foreigners. OFAC Director Smith said, "We will continue to identify, call out, and sanction those who are responsible for serious human rights abuses in Iran."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.